These days, it seems that every day we hear bad news about the Christian Church. A cardinal imprisoned on sex abuse charges, another convicted of a cover-up, a local Presbyterian church about to be demolished, the biggest Anglican church in Dunedin decimated by a split. On and on the bad news goes from a news media that seems gleefully glad to give us all the details. What are we to make of all this as we pursue our faithful Christian walk? We could, I guess, just keep our head down, think that our local Christian church is the whole Christian world to us, and just shut out the distracting clamour. Or we could live in the past, constantly and nostalgically recalling the good times when the church was treated well by a sympathetic society and surrounding culture back in the 1950s and 1960s. That's a temptation for me as I pursue writing the parish history. Or we could take up an angry, edgy, defensive stance, a conspiracy theorist approach to all these bad news media reports, assuming that they're motivated by hatred of the church and the Christian religion, with an underlying motivational base provided by the Prince of Darkness and Father of Lies. There might be a certain element of truth to this, but if we go down that road too far, we will find that that way madness lies. Alternatively, and I think more productively, we could search for the possible undercurrents of what is going on in God's providential operations in the world with a perspective supplied by reflection on the transfiguration of Jesus. Over the years, I've preached on this text from a number of different angles. I've talked about the way the Transfiguration reveals the inner life of God as Father, Son, and Holy Spirit. I've talked about the way uncreated light shining forth from Mount Tabor is a pointer to the way things will be for us in the life of the world to come. I've looked into the conversation between Jesus, Moses, and Elijah as a kind of summit conference on the subject of discouragement. All of these are valid and useful ways to consider the Transfiguration, but this morning I'm going to come at it from a very different angle. The early Christian community, the first generation of believers, had a major problem on their hands. How could they explain the failure of Jesus' mission to Israel? This had been the whole point of the ministry of Jesus. It had been prepared by God down the generations in the shaping and forming of the Jewish people as God's special people who would have the background knowledge and thought world to make sense of what Jesus would say and do. His ministry had combined spellbinding teaching as a supremely gifted communicator, backed up by amazing signs and wonders, miracles of healing and of mastery over the forces of nature. He had practiced generous table hospitality with despised groups offside with the Jewish law. Yet for all that, the results had been modest. Many had listened, but few had followed. People had marvelled at the miracles, and then got on with their lives. As for the other holiness movements around then, Jesus had soon got offside with them and earned their active opposition. The Transfiguration itself was a prelude to the last best offer to the ruling elite in Jerusalem and the pilgrimage enlarged inhabitants of the capital city. What would follow on from that could not be rated a success story. What Jesus had said and done soon dropped off the radar of Jewish religious consciousness. In fact, in Jewish Christian dialogue today, thoughtful Jews sometimes say to us, "If your leader was so significant, how is it that he's left so little trace in our historical records?" So the first generation or two of the Christian church who put the New Testament together are doing so with an increasingly Gentile church, a kind of accidental byproduct and seemingly unintended consequence of the ministry and mission of Jesus. Yet if this was the new world they found themselves in, the nagging question wouldn't go away. What were they to make of the failure of the mission of Jesus to his own people? The question comes to us too in a contemporary form, harking back to the place from which I started the sermon. What are we to make of the apparent failure of the mission of Jesus to New Zealand society and by extension Western society? At the Transfiguration, the inner core of disciples are being encouraged in this overwhelming experience to lift their gaze beyond the immediate prospect of catastrophe in Jerusalem. If their present hopes and expectations are about to be interrogated by a hefty dose of tragedy and failure, this disheartening dose of reality that is coming their way is counterbalanced by their immersion in the inner life of God. Just as the prophets of Israel were brought within the inner counsels of God to brief them on the coming catastrophe for Israel and of what would follow as the unexpected aftermath, so too the innermost three are briefly exposed to the radiant inner life of God so as to shift their perspective on what is about to follow. What then is God's way of dealing with the apparent failure of the mission of his Son then and now? God is a master strategist in his dealings with the human race, who works to an overall plan, yet has nonetheless great tactical flexibility and finesse as he responds to the tentative yeses and noes that form the response of the human race. How he did that on the hill of Golgotha and beyond will be the preaching challenge for Father Brian and myself at the Holy Week services. This morning I address the humiliations and reverses suffered by Christ's body, the Church, in the here and now. The Church is being sifted as though a winnowing fan was being run through and over its life. Corrupt practices that had long been swept under the carpet are being brought out into the light of day to be exposed and eliminated from its life. Forms of religious life and congregational association that are no longer fit for purpose are dying out. Some Christian denominations that have strayed from the central truths of the Christian faith to pursue contemporary trendiness are rapidly fading away. Lazy clergy and their slack congregations are not surprisingly failing to attract new members. The writing is on the wall for them. Not all forms of Christian religiosity are equally valid. Some are toxic both on the right and the left of the theological spectrum. There are national churches that have become corrupt and apostatizing. The world would be better off without them. I want to be fair and clear about this. There are good Christian people in the midst of congregations and parishes that are failing for any of the just mentioned reasons, and they are caught up in these forms of Christian failure through no fault of their own. There are well-intentioned and faithful Christian pastors and denominations that have lost their way, who are doing the best while all around them turns to mush. Various forms of collateral damage are dragging down the righteous and the devout, along with the faithless and the deeply mistaken. Yet the fact is that the Lord is confronting his church in judgment. He is purifying it in the furnace of affliction. In some ways, an unbelieving and hostile surrounding Western culture has become his unwitting agent of cleansing and sorting out the church. In just such a way, Yahweh, the Lord of history, used the Assyrians and the Babylonians to confront and disperse faithless Israel and Judah. In just such a way, he used the Persian Empire that eclipsed them to restore and bring back from exile the faithful remnant, the minority that had not bent the knee to the Baals. We too live in such a time and such a situation, and must welcome the purifying and cleansing action of the Lord, who strikes that he may heal. Spoken in the name of God, Father, Son, and Holy Spirit.